All right, last week we began a study in the book of Daniel. Well, we're in an introduction is what we're in. Now, as we are going through that introduction, just for clarity's sake, we'll finish up the introduction today. For those of you on the tape, Walter's walking around. Being Walter. All right. Now, anyway, we discussed the name of Daniel, what Daniel meant. God is my judge. God is judge. And you will find some interpret the name Daniel, judge who proclaims judgment in the name of God. So that's the name, just the name of Daniel, its interpretation. The most popular interpretation is God is my judge. And we also gave four reasons why the book of Daniel was written. Of course, the book of Daniel was written to show the sovereignty of God. And that's something that we need to keep in mind, that God is king. He is the one who is sovereign over all. When in the book of Genesis, at the very beginning, it said, and God said, let there be. And as soon as it obeyed the command, he asserts his authority as supreme ruler over all of creation. So one of the reasons why Daniel was written to show that the sovereignty of God. But also we pointed out another reason why Daniel was written, and that was to show that God had not violated the Davidic covenant. God had made a covenant with David in the sense that he would build him a house, not of brick and mortar, but a house of descendants. And this line of descendants would not would sit upon the throne forever. So as they go into Babylonian captivity, the Jew would say, God, you have violated the Davidic covenant. And we looked at Psalm 89. And we pointed out one of there were stipulations in the covenant of David in verses 30 and following, where it said that if your children sin, I will come and visit them with a rod. And that's what happened. David's children became ungodly, and according to the stipulations of the covenant, they went into captivity. Therefore, Babylonian captivity was punitive. It was a punitive action against the house of David. We also pointed out another reason why the book of Daniel was written, to show that the Messianic kingdom was not to arise after Babylonian captivity. You might get that idea from reading Isaiah or some of the prophets. And then the fourth and final reason that we gave, and there are other reasons, but the fourth and final reason that we gave is to show that the world kingdoms are not the kingdom of God. So these were some of the reasons why the book of Daniel was written. And then the third point on your study guide, if you remember last week, was that I pointed out that the kingdom that Jesus preached was a restored kingdom. That the question of Acts chapter 1 and verse 6, where the disciples asked Jesus, Lord, at this time, do you now restore the kingdom unto the people? He says, it's not for you to know the time and the place of God, but you go on into Jerusalem. But the question, do you now at this time restore the kingdom, is a valid question. That it was a restored kingdom. Now, we went to Micah chapter 3, verses 9 and following, and we showed the ungodliness of the people. And because of their ungodliness, at the end of chapter 3, Jehovah God, through the prophet Micah, said that the king, that Judah, Jerusalem, would be plowed under. And then as we begin in chapter 4 of the book of Micah, we pointed out that in the latter days, and then it describes all the things that were to happen under the Messianic rule, Micah chapter 4, verses 1 and following, is a messianic passage. And if you remember in verse 8, the prophet was very clear when he said that unto you, O daughter of Jerusalem, shall come the former dominion. In other words, the Davidic line would again be restored upon the throne of David. But between the time of Babylonian captivity and until the time that Jesus came, Gentiles sat upon the throne of David. A Babylonian sat upon the throne. A Medo-Persian sat upon a throne. A Grecian sat upon a throne. And then a Roman sat upon a throne. And then when the fullness of time came, God sent forth his son, born of woman under law. So at the appointed time, God sent forth once again a Jew to sit upon the throne of David, of the tribe of Judah, of the lineage of David. And this becomes even clearer as we get into the other passages of Scripture, like Matthew 28, where Jesus will say, "All authority hath been given unto me upon heaven and earth." The authority that was given was Davidic. Paul will make that clear in Acts chapter 13, where he says that God told Jesus that I will give you the sure and holy blessings of David. That would be the Davidic covenant. And to put it all together and to simplify what I've been saying, in Luke chapter 1, verses 30 and following, the angel will say unto Mary that you will have a son, you will call his name Jesus, and God will give unto him the throne of David. So when Jesus said the time is fulfilled and the kingdom is at hand, he is talking about a time when the kingdom would be restored back to the Davidic line. Is there any questions on that passage so far? So we understand that the Babylonian captivity was a punitive action against the children of David. That four kings would sit upon the throne, a Babylonian, a Medo-Persian, a Grecian, a Roman, and then the time would come when God would establish David's line upon that throne lasts forever. Okay, so that's a little bit of what we discussed last week. Now, on your study guide today, I pointed out that on the first point, the scope and the pattern of the book. Now, if you remember last week and the week before, I said in our study, we are going to approach this study in the book of Daniel in the sense of not only understanding the book of Daniel better, but we're going to approach the book of Daniel so that we'll be able to get a better foundation of what's being said so we can explain or debate, if you will, sometimes what it is that some of our friends, some of our families, some of our co-workers and others believe about the book of Daniel. I pointed out that in this class, sometimes you're going to hear the word liberal. And as you do outside reading on the book of Daniel, you will see that there are some of those who, some theologians, some commentators, comments in some of your study Bibles, whoever they are, they may tell you that there was no predictive prophecy in the book of Daniel. That in the book of Daniel, it was everything that happened in there had happened and was written by somebody else ascribing the book to Daniel. So you'll hear the word liberal sometime. Those who deny the prophetic passages in the book of Daniel. But you're also going to hear the word premillennialism. And these are those who see some of the things being fulfilled in history and yet seeing some of the things that will be fulfilled in the millennial kingdom. That there's going to be a time when there's going to be an individual called the Antichrist who will make a covenant, and in the midst of the seven years, he will break that covenant. There will be a great tribulation, and then Christ is going to come again. He will defeat the Antichrist, and then he's going to set up his 1,000-year rule here upon earth. Under this 1,000-year rule, this is what they teach. I'm not telling you what I think they teach. I'm telling you what they teach. That the Levitical sacrificial systems will be brought up again. The priesthood would be brought back again. All the Old Testament things, the temple and everything else, will be brought back. In other words, if they are correct, then Jesus died for nothing because your salvation will be wiped out. Are they right or are they wrong? These will be some of the things that we will be grounding in as we go through the book of Daniel. And once again, if you have a question, ask it. If I don't see your hand or if I don't pay attention to what you're saying, yell out. Ask the question. Maybe I didn't make myself clear. Or sometimes my words get ahead of my tongue and I may skip a few words and say something that is not clear. But ask a question. It takes as long as it takes. If I go too fast for you, tell me to slow down. But please, do not leave this class without any understanding of what we're talking about, okay? I haven't been given a time frame, so if it takes 25 years, then it'll take 25 years. But if it does take 25 years, some of you are going to have to get a faster pencil, okay? Now, point one on your study guide, the scope and the pattern of the book. You will see that I've got written down chapter 2, Babylon to Rome. In chapter 7, it will be Babylon to Rome. In chapter 8, it will be Medo-Persia to Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes. In chapter 9, it will be from Medo-Persia to Rome. And then in chapters 11 and 12, we'll be discussing the matters of Medo-Persian to Rome. Just a heads up, chapter 11 and 12 deal with the matters of the vision that appears in chapter 10. So this is the pattern of the book, and as you see, it covers the idea from Babylon to Rome. Everything in between. Now, one of the things that the premillennialists will say, they will say that, yes, there was some first century in fulfillment, but there will be other, they used to say 20th, but now it's 21st century fulfillment in the book of Daniel. So we'll have to find out, are they right or are they wrong? Okay? All right. Point two on your book of Daniel. Historical setting of the book. Now, as I pointed out in this class, I want you to look at other sources on your own. Some of the sources will be your commentators. Some of your sources will be your archaeological books or your historical books. Look at them and let's see what's going on. But a very brief historical outline. In the year 605 B.C., 605 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar defeats Pharaoh Necho and the remnants of the Assyrian Empire at the Battle of Carchemish. It is at this time that Nebuchadnezzar, after the defeat of the Battle of Assyria, and Pharaoh Necho and Carchemish, he comes down and he lays siege to Jerusalem. And that's Daniel chapter 1, beginning in verse 1, where it says, in the third year in the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem, and he besieged it. So this is the time frame beginning in the book of Daniel, 605 B.C. After the Battle of Carchemish, Nebuchadnezzar comes down, and he lays siege to Jerusalem. Jehoiakim will reign until the year 597, when another will sit on the throne. His name is Jehoiachin. This is 597 BC. Jehoiachin. Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin. He will reign only about 3 months, and he's taken away in captivity into Babylon. Now, the first deportation is 605. This is where Daniel and the royal seed go into captivity. That's 605. 597, Jehoiachin and Ezekiel and others go into Babylonian captivity. In the year 597 B.C., Zedekiah is set upon the throne. He is a weakling, and he is really ruling over nothing but the dregs of Judean society. He tries to rebel against Nebuchadnezzar. So in 586, Nebuchadnezzar comes back a third time, and he lays siege against Jerusalem. Zedekiah and his family try to escape. They are run down. Zedekiah then is stood before his family. The last thing he sees before they put his eyes out is the killing of all of his sons. And then he's taken off into Babylonian captivity, and that's where he dies, fulfilling the prophecy of Jeremiah. So we have 605, 597, the second deportation. 586 is the third deportation, and it's at this time Nebuchadnezzar destroys Jerusalem. Everything is laid waste. The temple is destroyed. The city is destroyed. Nothing is left standing. 605, really in 609, but 605, Nebuchadnezzar, Babylon is the world power. And that power will last until the year 539 B.C., which brings us to the events of Daniel chapter 5. 539 B.C., the Medo-Persian army under Cyrus the Great diverts the river of the Euphrates, and the army is able to go underneath the walls of the city and captures Babylon, basically without firing a shot. It is at this time that Babylon is no longer the world power, and Medo-Persia under Cyrus becomes the world power. That's 539 B.C. Medo-Persia will stay a world power until the year 331, when Alexander the Great defeats Darius III at the Battle of Gaugamela, G-A-U-G-A-M-L-E-A, I believe is the way it's spelled, Gaugamela in 331. And it is at this time Greece becomes basically a world power. Now understand, I'm just giving you a rough outline. There's a lot going on in between, but this is just a rough outline. Alexander becomes the king of Greece. He becomes the world power, but he dies at a young age. At his death, his empire is divided among four of his generals: Cassandra, Lysimachus, Ptolemy the first Soter, and Seleucus the first Nicator. These four generals divide up the empire of Greece, and they rule it. The only ones that we will be concerned with are the Ptolemies and the Seleucids, for it is these, the Ptolemies and the Seleucid, will have an influence or an impact upon the people of God. It is out of the Seleucids come Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes, who tries to Hellenize the world. And between the Ptolemies and the Seleucids, there is a power struggle. So that's in 331 B.C. The Grecian Empire, for our point, will stay basically in power until the year 31 B.C., till the Battle of Actium. I got my Civil War and my Roman War confused there. Actium. Where Octavian, who later becomes Augustus, the first emperor of Rome, defeats Mark Antony and Cleopatra. Cleopatra is of the Ptolemies. She commits suicide, so they say, and thus ends the Ptolemy kingdom. That's 31 BC, where Rome now becomes a world power. Under the time of Rome, in the book of Daniel, and we're only concerned with the book of Daniel, we'll be concerned with the first 11 emperors. You don't have to write these down. Just write down first 11 emperors. It would be Augustus, Tiberius, Caligula, Claudius, Nero, Galba, Otho, Vitellius, Vespasian, Titus, and then Domitian. Those will be the 11 emperors that we will be concerned with in the book of Daniel. In 66 AD, there was a Jewish revolt. And in this revolt, Nero sends Vespasian and the Roman army into Palestine to quell the uprising. While Vespasian is there, they conquer most of Palestine. They come around and they encompass the city of Jerusalem. At this time, Vespasian gets word that Nero has died and a civil war is going on in Rome. Nero died around 68 AD. Galba, Otho, and Vitellius, they reign a total of 18 months. Vespasian comes back, puts down the civil war, is made emperor. He then tells his son to finish the job of the Jewish revolt in Palestine, and this is 70 AD, where the city is taken down, and the end, basically, of the Mosaic Constitution is over. These will be the dates that we will be concerned with, the historical times that we will be concerned with in the book of Daniel, okay? Now, if you didn't get all that, you will get it as we go through the book. So you see where outside resources are sometimes helpful in a study. Any questions? All right, so enough of that. All right, the third point on your study guide, the trip to Babylon, and now we begin our textual study. The trip to Babylon, verses 1 through 7. All right, verses 1 through 7. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, what year was that? I just told you. Thank you, 605. In the third year of Jehoiakim, just had to make sure you were awake. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house, and he carried them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. And the king spake to Aspenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the seed of Israel, even of the seed royal and of the nobles, youths in whom were no blemish, but well-favored and skillful in all wisdom and endued with knowledge and understanding, science, and such as the ability to stand in the king's palace, that he should teach them the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed for them a daily portion of the king's food and of the wine which he drank, that they should be nourished 3 years, that at the end thereof they should stand before the king. Now among these were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And the prince of the eunuchs gave names unto them. Unto Daniel he gave the name of Belteshazzar, Hananiah the name Shadrach, Mishael the name of Meshach, and unto Azariah Abednego. And these were the names. Okay, so here we have the trip to Babylon. We're going to be brief in this first chapter for time's sake, but two reasons why the seed roll were taken. First reason, to benefit the kingdom of the captors. to benefit the kingdom of the captors. And this is common practice. Anytime a nation takes over another nation, they always get the best of the resources so they can better their kingdom. Whether it's physical resources or whether it's human resources, whatever that they can take to better their kingdom, this is what other nations will do. So to benefit the kingdom of the captors, and then another reason, to ensure that the defeated kingdom would not rise up again. There's another reason, because if you take over a country, but if you leave the military minds behind, what's going to happen? They will get together, they will rise up, and then what you've taken, you're going to have to take it again. So they had to benefit the kingdom and to ensure the kingdom would rise up. If you notice in verse 4, they had to look good. And this was something to the ancient mind that even today we even think of. You want something that makes your kingdom look good. The Oriental mind took the position that outside appearance reflected inside intellect. And so there's another reason for that. And they were also taught learning and language of the Chaldeans. The term Chaldean can be used in the sense of an ethical sense, or it can be used in the sense of a religious sense. And after 3 years, they were to stand before the king. To stand before the king is not just to stand up there and talk to him. To stand before the king in this sense means to be given an official capacity in what the king will inquire of them. If they are good in one area, they will be sent to that area. If they're good in another area, they will be sent into that area. So there is the idea to stand before the king. He is nourishing them, and this is to counteract any siege condition they may have faced. It was a long walk from Jerusalem to Babylon. And so he had to nourish them once again, and also to make friends with them. In other words, to make friends with them in the sense that they forgot who they were. To make friends with them so that they would do away with their former ways and incorporate the ways in which they were to live in. Their names were changed, and very quickly, you can look these up in a book. Daniel, of course, we said, God is my judge. Belteshazzar, may Baal protect his life. Hananiah, gracious is Jehovah. Shadrach, the meaning of that name is command of Aku. Aku was the moon god. Mishael, who is he that is God? Name was changed to Meshach, who is what Aku is. And then Azariah, whose name Jehovah hath helped. Abednego, servant of Nebo. And this was the god of the scribes. So their names were changed to further dissociate them from their former way of life, and even to dissociate them from their God. So there is the trip to Babylon. The next point that we want to quickly cover is the food test, and there's the first answer. Why did Daniel refuse to eat of the king's food and drink his wine? It was food that was offered to idols. It was food that was offered to idols. Now later on we see in the New Testament with further revelation, Paul wouldn't have a problem with that. Food is food. But during this time they would have a problem with food offered to idols.
And where's your verse for that?
For which one?
For what you just said.
that he, in verse 8, that he purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the king's food nor the wine. That's the reason why. That comes from the historical view. The food that was given to the king was always offered to the idols. At least that's my understanding.
Okay, so that's historical, not...
Yeah, it's not... Yeah, it's historical, not from the word. But we see that through antiquity. I mean, the king's food was always the food. I mean, most kings, especially when you get into Roman times that we know very well, Caesars, after they died, were deified, but there were a few that deified themselves while they were still alive. So their food offered to idols and stuff like that. But Daniel purposed in his heart not to eat of it. And there we see the idea of a good grounding that we need to instill into our children. Doesn't always work, I know. But if you give a good grounding in the children, perhaps they will remember one day when times are tough that the Lord is their God. There are approved 10 days, verse 12. Let's see. Daniel asked that they would be given vegetables to eat and water to drink and be tested. Now, Ashpezna was a little hesitant to do this, so Daniel gave a 10-day testing period in there. And he found out at the end of the 10 days in verse 12 or in verse 15, at the end of the 10 days, their countenance appeared fairer, and they were fatter in the flesh than all the youths that did eat of the king's food. And so the steward took away their food and the wine that they should drink, and now gave them herbs and water to drink.
They became vegetarians then.
Well, yeah, I'd have a hard time with that. I'm a carnivore. All right. So there's that. The next part that we have is the wisdom test. Oh, well, I just gave the third answer. I'm sorry. That's what happens when you rush through your class. Their countenance was fair, and they were fatter in the flesh than the other youths that ate the king's food. So there was the result. Now we want to look at the wisdom test. That's verses 17 through 21. We'll read that. Now as for these four youths, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. And at the end of the days, which the king had appointed for bringing them in, the prince of the eunuch brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king communed with them, and among them was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore they stood before the king. And in every matter of wisdom and understanding concerning which the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in all of his realm. And Daniel continued even to the first year of King Cyrus. Now we'll slow down just a little bit on this passage of scripture here. Now the first point on your study guide, what were Daniel and his three friends given by God? They were given knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom. Knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom. And Daniel received understanding understanding in all visions and dreams.
What's the difference between a vision and a dream?
One you get and the other you dream.
The reason I ask that, on through the book, there's many places where there are visions and dreams. They're both listed.
I think
spots where just one is used.
I think sometimes it's interchangeable, and then there are some times when we will see, like, Daniel will be standing somewhere. Let me find a passage. Well, in Daniel chapter 8, in the third year of the reign of Belshazzar, a vision appeared unto me. It doesn't say that he was asleep and a dream came unto him. A dream came unto Joseph that the sheaves and stuff, or a dream came unto Pharaoh. A dream will come unto Nebuchadnezzar, but Daniel had visions. This is just an example. Now, the vision, of course, was explained to Daniel. Sometimes they're interchangeable and sometimes they're not. And I would think that a dream would come when dreams come, when you're napping. Or a vision would come while they were in the midst of meditation, or in the midst of contemplating something, that God would send the vision. That's my understanding. I'll try and look it up, give you a better answer. All right. Now, as we go through this, now that they come before the king, they stood before the king not to answer just the questions, but remember, to stand before the king was to be given official capacity. They communed with the king, and it doesn't say how long. It just said that they communed with the king. And in all these things, the king found, point two, them 10 times better than his magicians and his enchanters that were in the realm. Notice, concerning the things of which he inquired of them. That's important. Because the liberal will say to you, well, then why in chapter 2, if they were better, 10 times better than his enchanters and his magicians, why in chapter 2, when Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, why didn't he call them then? Well, he doesn't say that he's better than all of their magicians and enchanters. He said in the things that he inquired of them that they were better. When you take your automobile, and that's what we have to do nowadays, when we take our automobile to a mechanic shop, who do you want working on your automobile? The guy that just came out of college, who has to look it up on YouTube? Or do you want the guy who has been working in the automotive field all of his life? The guy that has the tools. The guy that has the ability and will be able to listen to it and say, yeah, this is what's wrong. Same thing here. Even though Daniel and the boys still gave answers 10 times better than his magicians and his enchanters, these were in things that he inquired of them. But it doesn't mean in everything. And when the time comes for decisions, he still wants his trusted people he still relies upon the advice of his trusted people. So don't be tripped up on this, because there will be those who will say, see, the Bible's wrong here, or there's a contradiction here. Why didn't he call Daniel first instead of these other guys? So there's your explanation. Now, the last point that we're going to fill, what was verse 21 written to tell us? Look at it again, verse 21. And Daniel continued even unto the first year of King Cyrus. Verse 21 is written to tell us that Daniel made it through Babylonian captivity. Like I said, there are those who take the position that Daniel was written by somebody else, that there is no predictive prophecy in it. Verse 5, verse 1 and verse 21 tells us that Daniel made it through the 70-year captivity. And once again, as I pointed out last week, he was probably a teenager or a young man when taken into captivity. We know that he made it through the third year of Cyrus, chapter 10, verse 1. Okay? Now that was very quick and brief, but there really wasn't a whole lot in there for us to really discuss. We'll pick up in chapter 2 next week, and then when we get to the image, we'll have a little bit more discussion on that. All right? Any questions? All right. God bless you.